It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
And so I left out the well howdy part for the first time in eons, but we'll have to deal with that. We'll just have to learn to live with that. So, well howdy. This is The Horn. Headon.live is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the chat room. Click on chat room, pick yourself out a free screen name and a password. It's all free. Everything here is free. And jump into the multimedia madcap, real-time, wacky, zany extravaganza of a conversation that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday. If you do jump in, well, Anatole is there early. Also, longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who being a spacing guild master and has folded space to become Man Cave, is there waiting your arrival as well. Yes. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's about 2 minutes past the hour. It is the 30th day. The penultimate day of October 2018. It's a Titanic Tuesday, but we're going to start the program with a conversation this evening, one that I think is. What do you mean, no sound? Stand by. Okay, now there should be sound on headon.live. Too many buttons. For some reason or another, we've got a degraded audio over on the White Rose stream. No idea why. But we're streaming on headon.live. And everything should be hunky-dory. Let's see. We start the program out with thank yous, always. And thanks to our friends at West Mesa for their kind contribution this evening, West Mesa Photography, as well as this is a good evening to do our thank yous for folks who contribute through the mail. I've got some envelopes here. And forgive me, because Boss Man Wayne takes care of this kind of stuff, and I don't so often see it. But I did want to make sure that we got thanks out this evening to Mighty Mouse and to Rudy in Arizona, to Brandon in Brooklyn, and to Dennis in Ohio, because it all goes into helping keep the program on. Thank you very much to each and every one of you, to everyone who contributes through the mail. Like I said, Boss Man Wayne usually sees that, and I don't always know about it coming through. But rest assured, it counts. It really, really counts. So, like I said, we're going to begin the program this evening with a conversation. I really enjoyed the conversation last night with Eddie Crow up in Pittsburgh. And, what's that? Hunky on headon.live, but not Dory on White Rose. Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Steve, in New York. Loud and clear on headon.live. It's just a matter of getting the right buttons, you know. We've got all the buttons. Now all we have to do is press them in the right order. That's what my old engineer told me once upon a time. But here in a couple of minutes, I'm going to reach out and make contact with David Nywert And we're going to talk a little bit about the interplay between both ciderism, that noxious, toxic affectation of the for-profit media, and how it plays against or with white-wing violence in this country. Also, getting us started this evening, Ron in Raleigh with his note, every damn day. I'm sure you remember that during the 8 years of the Obama administration, that when President Obama drew up an executive order, some Republican or group of Republicans started kvetching, whining, and beating their flabby breasts about how Obama was a dictator, overreaching and pushing something down our throats. So today, the clown in the White House with the piss-tinted hair has decided that he can override the Constitution with an executive order. He wants to get rid of birthright citizenship, stating that we're the only country that allows such a thing. I guess this jagoff doesn't realize 30 other countries have birthright citizenship. Nimrata Haley wondered why nobody blamed Barack Obama when Dylann Roof shot up the church in South Carolina. Are these folks just stupid or disingenuous? Hey, we don't always have to set up some sort of conflict here, Ron. They can be stupid and disingenuous, okay? Come on, unity. The dirt, says Ron, is tasting better, but I still can't catch the rabbits. Well, you know, the dirt always tastes better after the first frost. Maybe y'all haven't had that down there yet, but yeah. I know, and we'll probably be talking about all of those things later in the evening. I'd like to say that it's a clear-cut slam dunk that there's no way he can mess with the right of a child born in this country to be a citizen of this country, but guess what? There are no norms anymore. All the norms are gone. Mm-hmm. They just got on a plane and flew away, all the norms. Norm? Yeah, not here anymore. But like I said, I want to start the conversation this evening with my good friend, David Nywert. David is, among other things, well, he's many things. I last saw him when we were both in New Orleans, down at Netroots Nation. But David is most recently the author of Alt America, The Rise of the Radical Right in the Age of Trump, from Verso Books, this past, about a year ago. He's out of Seattle, the Pacific Northwest correspondent for the Southern Poverty Law Center. And as I said on social media just a little bit ago, I consider David to be the foremost authority on the dangers of right-wing hate and the organized violence of right-wing hate in this country. So it gives me real joy to welcome back to the program David Nywert. Hey, David, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bob. How are you?
I'm okay, I guess. I mean, it's...
I don't think any of us are doing well right now, actually.
I know. I mean, it's the damnedest 4 or 5 days I think I've been through in a while. The pain, the heartache, and frankly, the fear that accompanies all of this is something that I'm not accustomed to, but the weirdness certainly is, since at least January the 20th, 2017. Everybody pretty much knows who you are and what you do because of the conversations we've had over the years and what I just said by way of introduction. But you've got a brand new article today out at The Baffler, thebaffler.com.
Yeah.
And nobody puts this together better than you do. The name of the article is "Having It Both Ways," and it's subslugged "Centrist Dogmatism and the Corporate Media's See No Evil Syndrome." Let me
sum it up real quick.
Yeah.
Both sides don't do it.
Yeah, right. I beat that drum here quite consistently. Do you have any do you have any sense of what the impetus is inside what I refer to as the for-profit media or the millionaire media, because that seems to be where it comes from, What drives them to this notion of having to of having to try to create a duality where no duality exists?
Well, you know, Bob, I don't need to tell you the most media ownership is conservative, typically conservative Republican. Most of the owners, it's pretty rare that you actually get somebody who's an owner of a media company who is a liberal Democrat. In fact, almost never. It certainly in my years of working for corporations, that was the case. Now, when I was first starting out my career, yeah, I worked for a couple liberal Democrats who ran small community newspapers. And those people are all extinct now because they all those papers got snapped up by corporations. So I think a lot of it is deference to that. It's like you can't crack that line of actually acknowledging the reality when it comes to it's a very one-sided reality about political violence in this country, and we can't acknowledge that it's one-sided. That the majority of political violence that we're enduring in this country comes from the radical right, and has for years. You know, that's taboo. That's impolite to point this out, you know, and yeah, I'm a rude son of a bitch, as I pointed out all the time.
Well, you know what, there's a big difference between being rude about something and being homicidal, Dave.
Yeah.
And toward that end, you know, when people go and read this article, they're going to find that you lay out chapter and verse of who's done the violence and when it's been done. And frankly, once you get past the guy who shot Steve Scalise and the guy who perpetrated the attack on the cops in Dallas, both of which were equally horrifying, but are not the same thing as running into a synagogue screaming, "All Jews must die."
Or walking into a University Unitarian Church in Knoxville with the intent of trying to kill as many liberals and hoping that people will pick up the cudgel and start killing liberals, which is what Jim David Adkison did back in 2008. And has happened since, you know, that guy who walked into the movie theater down in Louisiana and started gunning people down because they were watching an Amy Schumer movie, he left behind a manifesto talking about how, you know, he wanted to start killing liberals, and that's, you know, he thought Dylann Roof had the right idea, but it wasn't black people who were the enemy, it was liberals in Hauser's
idea. The thing that kind of baffles me, Dave, is that in the case of the shooter in Louisiana and the case of Jim David Adkison in Knoxville, and that's probably the one that stands out for me. I mean, not for any particular reason except for the fact that he left, and people who want to read it can go and find it online. He left a detailed manifesto in which he laid out every reason for why he did what he did, and in the process also left a pretty damn good breadcrumb trail of the people who had weaponized him.
Yeah, well, he had a library full of books by Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity and Michael Savage. And that was who he cited in his manifesto.
And Bernie Goldberg.
Yeah, because he said specifically he wanted to kill the 100 people who were in Bernie Goldberg's book. And we're seeing, you know, this kind of scripted violence is very common on the right. And unfortunately, you know, and I have to say the case that still haunts me, even though it's not American, but because the body count was so high, and frankly, he was inspired by American right-wing extremists, was Anders Breivik in Norway.
Sure.
Back in 2011. You know, that the way he hunted down and just cold-bloodedly killed 58 teenagers because they had been contaminated by socialist ideology is still something I can't get out of my head.
Well, it's because it feels so. You get a sense that, and you know, we saw it a year ago in Las Vegas, that it can happen here. I'd like to take the conversation backwards.
My niece was in that audience, you know.
Oh, my God, I did not know.
Yeah, she barely escaped with her life.
Jesus, God. I would like to take us backwards just a minute. You used a phrase a moment ago, and I would appreciate it if you would expand upon it, please. You used the term scripted violence. What do you mean when you say that?
Well, it's what a lot of people call stochastic terrorism, but stochastic terrorism actually is a more technical term that refers to a specific phenomenon. What we're actually seeing, what you see like in Rwanda, is people coming out and scripting violence for people. These are who you target. This is why you target them. They must die. That sort of thing. They must be eliminated. We've got to get rid of them. That's who gets targeted. And then the people go out and take that script and commit the violence. That's how scripted violence works. It's what Donald Trump has been doing.
That was my next question. That sounds an awful lot like what goes down at a Trump rally.
No. He's been scripting violence directed at liberals. He's been scripting violence directed at refugees. And he's been scripting violence directed at Jews. And we're seeing all that take place. You know, a guy goes on a bombing rampage trying to kill all these liberal leaders, all of whom Donald Trump has specifically named as enemies. You know, you can't deny the connection there, that he was obviously inspired by Trump's rhetoric. It's inescapable.
Can you walk us through real quick a sort of deconstruction of the one argument that we're getting in the wake of Pittsburgh? Namely, that Donald Trump can't possibly bear any responsibility in this because Donald Trump has a son-in-law who is Orthodox Jewish and his grandchildren are Jewish, and therefore he can't bear any responsibility in this. Two, also the fact that the shooter said he hated Donald Trump. Can you sort of take that apart or put it together?
Well, he hated Donald Trump because Donald Trump wasn't anti-Semitic enough. You know, he's tolerant of Jews, has his daughter and son-in-law are Jewish, right?
And emphasis on the word not anti-Semitic enough.
Enough, yeah. Yeah, no, he's not explicitly anti-Semitic, which is what this guy, I mean, this guy was just a flagrant neo-Nazi. So there are a number of neo-Nazis who don't find Donald Trump racist enough for their tastes and denounce him as well, but they tend to be actually in the minority, especially among white nationalists. This guy would have been in the minority, but they're out there. And it wasn't the important thing to remember is that it wasn't. Yes, it was sort of this toxic combination of the fact that he blamed it on these Jews. But it was also the fact that he was all worked up about the caravan, which was something Trump had been trumpeting and Fox News had been trumpeting for the week leading up to it. In fact, it was absolutely Fox News' number one news story for the week before it. And it's, in a lot of ways, I would point the finger at much at Fox News as I would at Donald Trump.
Well, that makes an abundance of sense, actually. Let me go back to the shooter himself, Bowers, and because you do and have done for such a long time such a magnificent job tracking all of this. His final message going in was "fuck your optics, I'm going in."
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that debate in the murderous right wing about what did that "fuck your optics" line mean?
Well, it just meant that he didn't care about the politics. He knew that there was a midterm election coming up, and he just doesn't give a shit about that stuff because he doesn't like Republicans anyway. He doesn't, he doesn't think they're racist enough. So he's just going to go do it because what he's got worked up about is this caravan, right? And so, you know, to heck with the optics, to heck with the political considerations, I'm just going to go do what I need to do to start the racial war, because that's what we need to have right now, basically, is the attitude. And it's, yeah, very much a screw the midterms sort of view. And I have to say, I can't help but think that this is going to have a, you know, really powerfully negative effect on the Republican ticket in the midterms, you know, from my lips to God's ears. But, you know.
Well, yeah, you're hoping more than thinking, I suspect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, within these sordid, fetid places where these Nazis and skinheads and Klansmen congregate, one of the things that first looked at when I heard the news coming out on Saturday, was this resettlement organization, HIAS, the Hebrew Immigration and AIDS Society. I frankly, I pay attention, Dave. I hadn't heard that name come out. Is that something? Are they out? Have they been out there barking about this organization, or did he just find it on his own?
No. Well, they have been on the fringes, and particularly, I think, in the Alex Jones quadrant. But I believe that it's also been on Fox News as well. Actually, it would be kind of interesting to see, to trace that and see where the agitation was coming from. What we know is that, Trump's tweets the days before had really gotten the white nationalist groups all whipped up into a frenzy like we hadn't seen for a while. And there's a post of Hate Watch, by the way, that I didn't write, but a terrific piece of research that pointed out how the white nationalist right was getting whipped into a frenzy over the caravan by Donald Trump. and that was published before the Pittsburgh massacre.
So I've seen the hashtag scaravan out there, and it seems to fit. That gets its genesis at Fox, does it not?
Yeah, that does get its. That's totally a Fox thing, right?
So, if we can posit the scenario here, we now know that Donald Trump on a good day gets about 3 hours of work in, and the rest of it is the rest of its executive
time.
Yes, executive time. And so during executive time,
I want some of that executive time.
That's got to be some good stuff. That executive time. If only he had the good common sense to enjoy it, but never mind. But he's sitting there with his cell phone and his tiny little hands, and his tiny little thumbs work really well on the, well, it depends on how you like the spelling, but you know. And so he just sees a feature on Fox News about this. I mean, I'm really interested in the dot connecting, if you will. Because I can't imagine that somebody at Fox just said, during the editorial meeting one day, "Hey, boss, what do you say I go and wander around down in Honduras for a little while?"
This has been cooking up. Somebody's been cooking this up. They all agreed on doing this at some point. I don't know whose idea it was, but it's probably Stephen Miller's. It's probably something Miller cooked up, and they've all gotten behind the plan. That would be my guess. I mean, it's just it's obviously a concocted scenario, I don't know what actually happened with the caravan. You know, pretty clear that the timing wasn't the best, but I don't know that there is any manipulation there. It certainly kind of raises your eyebrows and makes you wonder. But it is, near as I can tell, the participants in this caravan are all, you know, people legitimately seeking political asylum.
And that, and we, the right in this country simply can't have that. Let me shift gears over to the bomb stuffer the MAGA bomber. Cesar Sayas. At the risk of going at the beginning of this portion of the conversation, Dave, at the risk of going all Alex Jones.
It's a game of morale.
Exactly. See, you know, this is why I love our conversations. If you'll forgive me saying so, and again, at the risk of sounding like I've been, you know, like I got a case of the paranoids, here we have a loser, a guy who, let's see, he's a Christian roid raging pizza delivery guy stripper.
Yeah.
Who has a sidelight in attempted bomb building. That's so far, right? I mean, we're all.
Yeah. Well, Bob, as you know, I've been covering a lot of these all right free speech events of the past couple of years, mostly out on the West Coast. In Berkeley and Portland and Seattle and San Francisco and various venues, and closely tracking a lot of these folks. And I encounter these kind of characters all the time coming to these Trump rallies. It's authoritarianism. I mean, it's just a picture. This guy's almost like a caricature of the classic right-wing authoritarian personality. If he wasn't sending out bombs, he would be kind of funny, you know.
Yeah, almost comic, but.
Yeah, it is almost, he is almost comic, especially the life of the, as a bodybuilder.
Bodybuilding and, Christian pizza and delivery male. Stripper. Yes.
Male stripper, yeah.
But here's
what the revolution's going to start is going to kill all the lesbians.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Jesus. I'm 55 years old. I never saw this. I mean, I never dreamed that this was a conversation I'd be having in the middle of my sixth decade of life. I mean, I just didn't.
But Bob, see, this is the thing. You know, these guys all, I mean, he's actually the apotheosis of a type that there's hundreds of these guys out there on the fringe who are heavily armed. I mean, they have caches of weapons in their basements and tons of ammo. Some of them are playing with pipe bombs and doing stuff, who are, most of all, when you see them online, they're itching for a civil war. And you hear this talk among them all the time.
The civil war fetish.
The civil war fetish, where they're all going to, oh, God, I can't wait until I can start popping off liberals. And this is the kind of talk that you see on the internet all the time now on these right-wing, you know, far right-wing sites. And,
it's
not just Cesar. There's a bunch of these guys out
right,
there.
Right, right. And what I guess I'm getting at, Dave, is and you know these networks far better than I, so you can just go on to Gab and there's, you know, hey Patriot, let's build some bombs or something out there. I mean, did this guy have some help? Do you think he had some help? Was there guidance? I mean, what?
As far as Cesar goes, no, you know, you can get this stuff off the internet. No, yeah, that's right. You can get bomb recipes off the internet. He might have gotten help. One of the things that, you know, they don't tell amateur bomb builders, that those of us who've been following the radical right for a long time have long since learned, is that bomb building ain't as easy as it looks. Yeah, because I've covered a lot of people who get blown up. These guys get blown up in the process of, you know, we learn about right-wing extremists when they accidentally blow themselves up more often than not, because it's actually real easy to set a pipe bomb off when you're building it, especially about the time you screw the cap on.
the right has pushed this idea that these were not bombs that were designed to explode. Do you buy into that at all?
Well, they certainly have pushed the idea. The law enforcement authorities have pushed back on it and said, no, these are legitimate devices. They certainly had all of the components that you would expect of a functioning device. There may have been some actual construction flaw that kept them all from going off. And who knows whether that was deliberate or not. But the fact that they sent a device capable of exploding is good enough. And honestly, they don't even have to explode or be capable of exploding to have a terrorist intent. I mean, that's the thing. I think
that's embodied within the federal statute, isn't it?
That's right. It doesn't matter whether it's a functioning device or not, other than it'll get you a longer sentence if it's actually functioning. But it's still, you're going to get charged with building a bomb, which is a federal offense. That's right. And so, let's just put it this way. Not only is it most likely bullshit, it's also a complete non sequitur.
Well, you said, of course, that there are hundreds and maybe thousands. I did some very rudimentary ciphering. I get into trouble anytime I start ciphering. I'm an English major, for God's sakes. But if you take Donald Trump's vote total and you pull out 1% of it, you've got roughly 600,000 people.
Yeah.
And the phrase that was used that I saw used the other day, I think it was on that morning program on MSNBC, whatever, that it was a tiny fraction of Trump supporters. Well, 1% is a tiny fraction of something.
Yeah.
That's still that's still over 500,000 people. Let me ask you this. If we take into account that, and I had this clip back before the inauguration, maybe before the election, of Milo Yiannopoulos and Steve Bannon talking, saying that fully half of the GOP base was so-called alt-right. Is it so ridiculous to think that there are 600,000 white supremacists, alt-right, whatever we're going to call them, and their sympathizers in this country?
Oh, yeah, no, not at all. I mean, it was something that got brought up. They asked Heidi Beirich of the Southern Poverty Law Center, if we had tracked this guy, Bowers, if he was on our list. And she said, no, but that's not a surprise because we're talking about hundreds of thousands of, participants in these movements. So, I would say that's a pretty conservative number, actually. I'm concerned that we're reaching into the millions. So,
Jesus. I mean, that's chilling. I mean,
especially among young people. They've been very successful at recruiting young people into white nationalist belief systems, primarily through the alt-right, and because especially young white males. So
disaffected. The what do we get? The incels.
And kids who are turned off by liberal PC culture, as they say, and they themselves get triggered by those who are easily triggered. It's kind of funny, but there you have it. I've noticed. That's the alt-right's recruitment demographic is white males ages 15 to 30, and they've been pretty successful at penetrating into that market.
Now, also in your article today, you talk about the and you've mentioned it already, the Civil War fetish. And you talk about the fact that you don't hear it so much on the left or over here.
People on the left don't talk about having a civil war. It's like, let's have a civil war. There's nobody on the left doing that.
I might personally be a little bit guilty because a long time ago I coined a phrase here called cold civil war. I took the idea of a cold war and a civil war, married them together, and suggested that was what the right wing was up to.
Yeah.
And I feel a little bit vindicated because it looks like it's hotting up. But no, this isn't the same thing as imagining some hoary, white-bearded slave owner riding his beloved horse into battle with legions of butternut-clad assholes behind him. Whatever it is these people think they're fantasizing, that ain't it. So is it some sort of asymmetrical... what do they mean when they say they want a civil war?
Wolverines!
Oh, dear God. Wait a minute. Yeah. Wait a minute. We've got reverb for that, Dave. Yeah. Wolverines! That's a thing here.
Some of it's Red Dawn paranoia stuff. And so, you know, it's a leftover from, you know, the Bircher fantasies of the 70s and 80s. But the, you know, yeah, no, they definitely have. I mean, once the Russians went away as an external national threat, they naturally, and they were already inclined to see this internal threat anyway. So they just naturally became fetishized about the supposed threat to national security from liberals and socialists. And that's, you know, that's what they've been on about for a long time. So, yeah, no, that's who they want to go to civil war with. And that was why they couldn't stand having Obama be president, because they never saw him as a legitimate president. You know,
but meanwhile, their religious leaders sat around engaging in what's called imprecatory prayer, praying for him to die in office and for Michelle to be widowed and his two daughters to be orphaned. There seems to be no bottom with the ugliness of which they're capable.
No.
The question then becomes, Dave, is there a fix? Because I'm frightened, and it seems like if Donald Trump loses on Tuesday, the maggots are going to go wild, and if Donald Trump wins on Tuesday, the maggots are going to go wild.
Well, Bob, any fix has to be long term. I mean, there's nothing we can change overnight, and it's going to be a really long, slow haul to get out of this dark hole we've fallen into. And I don't know how many bodies are going to have to follow into it along the way. But I'm hoping not many. You know, I'm hoping that this November election we recognize the threat and we rise up. And we take the first steps towards seizing power back from these bastards.
Are they following a playbook of sorts, Dave? Because, you know, you had Mother Emanuel, you had the church in Jeffersontown, Kentucky. You've got the synagogue in Pittsburgh, and it all seems to sort of mirror ugly things from our past, the bombing of a synagogue in Atlanta, the bombings of churches in Alabama. Is this their grandchildren and great grandchildren just following in ancestral footsteps?
Yeah, in some ways it is. It's, you know, the belief that they are. Especially for the ones who are acting out violently. It's this belief that they all see themselves as heroic, every one of these guys. I can guarantee you that Mr. Bowers sees himself as heroic, as did Timothy McVeigh, as did Eric Rudolph, as have done these mass killers throughout history who have done it in the name of politics.
Are they being lionized in these right wing sewers now?
Oh yeah, of course. And maybe the biggest one of all is Anders Breivik, who definitely is a cult figure and hero, partly because he's still alive for these guys. Also because Breivik killed so many people. His body count was so high, they loved that.
Jesus God. What about the Proud Boys and the Patriot Prayer Bunch? I know you're intimately familiar with them because, again, of where you are. And in fact, the last time you and I saw each other was in New Orleans, and we were talking about the Proud Boys going wild in Portland, and it has since only gotten worse.
Oh, yeah.
And it drives me crazy when I see in the millionaire media, when I see them referred to as a, honest to Jesus, I kid you not, a fraternity. As if, you know, okay, there's the Sigma Chi's, and there's the Tappa Kega Days, and there's the Proud Boys.
Well, and then the New York Times runs a little puff piece profile of Gavin McInnes as a hipster, provocateur. Hipster provocateur, who's just, his just happens to be his method of provocation is to send gangs of thugs out onto the streets to pick fights.
And the incident in New York, and well, New York and Miami most recently, but the one in New York, he tweeted out afterward that he had a lot of friends in the NYPD. Is there, do you give any credence to the idea that it was so damn difficult to get the NYPD to act because there are violent right-wing sympathizers in police departments?
Yeah, no, not at all. I've been, having been out covering these events, it's very clear that the police are sympathetic to the right-wing side and mostly act to protect the right-wing extremists from any consequences for their behavior. And so, yeah, when, they're setting up cordons all the time, but, you'll see them, if somebody from the left runs across the lines and starts getting into it with somebody on the people on the right hand side, police will come over and arrest that guy from the left. But if people from the right go and invade the other side, they don't do anything about it. I've watched this time after time after time.
That was my next question. That's not theory. You've seen it.
That's what. This guy, Tiny Tois, who's part of Joey Gibson's outfit, the Patriot Prayer, the far-right outfit that's been organizing most of these protests here on the West Coast. Tiny Tois constantly wades right into the middle of the crowd on the other side in a hope of provoking a fight. He's this big Samoan guy, and he loves to get into fights.
Is it a violation of Godwin's law or anything like that to point out the similarities between Patriot Prayer and the Proud Boys and say, the essay of an era gone by?
Well, they don't have the official support of the party. That's the difference. Patriot Prayer and Proud Boys aren't, well, let's put it this way. Proud Boys, until they held their meeting at the Republican Club, were not officially affiliated with the Republican Party. Now I think that connection has been made. We'll see if it continues. That's a very dangerous connection.
Well, and that connection was made in Miami, too.
And that's when they become the SA. That's right. No, when you see, that's right. There was the guy in Miami who was out there marching with the Proud Boys. So the more we see that, the more I think the danger is real that, these guys are going to be their brown shirts. And ironically, of course, in Italy, they were called black shirts because they wore black shirts instead of brown. But they served essentially the same function in Italy. They went out and were street thugs and got into fights with unionists and socialists and communists.
Unreasonable to think that is a transformation that could continue?
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I think it's been ongoing all along. And there have been certain markers along the way where we've seen the connection growing. But at this point, all I can do is record it and call it out.
Well, I understand that, but that's also my next question. Because I don't want to. I know how busy you are.
It's just part of the deal. It's like I've been doing this for years and getting routinely ignored. So it's like, okay, whatever. I'm going to keep writing about it, and if people want to pay attention to it, then great.
But are there any campaigns out there on our side, if you see something, say something? Because what drives me bananas is, and I've been asking this question since we found out who Cesar Sayoc was, How is it that you go toddling around South Florida with a van with crosshairs on people's faces and everybody goes,
forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown. It's Florida man, Jake. He would say, Florida man is the, and he is, he's like the consummation of the Florida man meme. No, that's what I was saying. I see dozens of these guys. They're common. Yeah, they have the vans plastered with stickers and scrawling on the wall.
I remember we had a guy around here who used to toddle around in a beat up old rusty vehicle with a Bush Cheney sticker still on it. And he had written the word Obama across his back glass, and then he spelled out words underneath each letter in Obama's name. And said, "One big ass mistake, Mark." And I'm not an enemy of free speech. I put the First Amendment to work every evening here. There's never been a program here where I have suggested that anyone needs to die.
Yeah, no kidding. But they do all the time, and it's like that's their solution because they're fundamentally eliminationist. That's their solution to everything is, well, let's just get rid of it, let's just wipe it out. Let's wipe them off the face of the earth because I don't want to deal with them. A lot of them are people who don't want life, don't want to deal with the fact that life is normal. I ran on my Twitter feed the other day. I picked up a photo of somebody driving around with this written on the back window of their Mitsubishi in large white letters. "Hey, bomber, I get the who and why, but I'd rather see them publicly executed."
Right, and that's where I
this is just common. I mean, that's the thing. It's just common. There's the visceral hatred out there is just everywhere, and it's been years getting brewed up, and God, I don't know how long it's going to take us years to get rid of it. I don't know how long.
Is there any reason to hope that in the aftermath of the bomber, and in the aftermath of Pittsburgh, that maybe law enforcement might take things a little more seriously if you say, "Hey, there's a guy driving around in a panel van with crosshairs on people's faces"?
I wish they would, but unfortunately, Bob, of course, you and I are old time journalists. We all did the cops and courts routine. We all got to know cops over the years, right? Yeah. I mean, I worked with cops for years, and I have plenty of cops who are friends. And it's just part of the deal when you're a journalist is that you get to know cops, and I've always tended to sympathize with them for the most part, except for the obviously bad cops who kill black people. It's like, okay, people who abuse their position and their power. I'm against that in any way, and I don't think that that's a controversial position to take, but. Nonetheless, I will say that I've been dismayed and appalled by the way Fox News culture has basically overtaken the law enforcement culture in this country. Most of the cops I know now are pretty hardcore, pretty heavy duty Fox News people. They all watch it. They all buy into. They all buy they drink the Kool-Aid, which is why you see the reaction that you've seen, for instance, to Black Lives Matter, where there's this vociferous A, denial that police are abusing black men, and B, then the response is that we have this Police Lives Matter thing, and they even have a this black and white flag with blue stripes in it. That's a Police Lives Matter thing. It's true. There's the murders of the five police officers in Dallas that were not by. It wasn't a guy who was actually involved in Black Lives Matter, but he was angered by he was inspired by some of the things that the issues that Black Lives Matter raised. And so, he gets chopped
and one
up
and
to
one
Black
of the
Lives
officers.
Matter, but even so, not one of these Police Lives Matter people has recognized that the number one most lethal threat to law enforcement officers over the last 20 years, consistently year after year, cops get killed by sovereign citizens, white right wing domestic terrorist sovereign citizens, and that's their number one threat. That's who's the most lethal threat out there. And yet these same cops that I know who don't really stop to think about that reality are out there being buddy buddy with these militiamen at these Portland protests. And I'm just going, this guy's a sovereign citizen. Do you know that? You just got to shake your head sometimes.
Well, there's another aspect of this, Dave, and that is that there's been such a flourishing through tax-exempt organizations of all manner of right-wing fringe religious broadcasting. I was just gobsmacked the other day, and I played the clip here on the program of an immigrant preacher, an evangelist by the name of Rodney Howard Brown. I don't know if you've ever heard of this guy, but he was engaging in conversation, and in all earnestness, suggested that Ruth Bader Ginsburg should be shot.
Yeah.
And does he get a visit from the Secret Service or the U.S. Marshals or anything for that? Probably not.
Oh. Yeah. Actually, I would hope so. That kind of direct threat actually usually does get a Secret Service response, actually. And then they tell them not to talk about the Secret Service showing up to their door, which is why you don't hear about it. But, I would hope they do. I mean, certainly it should. That's because that is a direct threat. I mean, what they usually get away with is this sort of secondhand stuff. It's
the stuff with a nod and a wink.
Right, or it's of the who will rid me of this priest stuff, of this.
I think it was during the same broadcast, I had a clip of another one of these, I'll go ahead and use the freaks, who suggested that, and, of course, the magic word, George Soros should be arrested, his assets should be confiscated by the state, and he should be thrown in prison for the rest of his life. Of course, George Soros is the new buzzword for the Rothschilds, the ZOG, the Zionist Occupied Government.
Protocols of the Seven Elders, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's cultural Marxism now. Protocols are out. Cultural Marxism's in. The Frankfurt School is in.
Oh, is that, okay.
It's no longer protocols. We're not talking about protocols anymore. We're talking about the Frankfurt School. That's the new 21st century version of the protocols.
And they all understand, even if we don't, what their dog howls, dog whistles, fog horns, bull horns mean. And so so again, the folks out there in the millionaire media may hear cultural Marxism and they're like, well, I don't want to be a commie. And
right.
And so they tacitly, without even fully understanding what they're doing, they give a pass to this this festering anti-Semitism.
Yeah, well, the total lack of understanding by mainstream reporters, and particularly, it seems, the unbelievably obtuse reporters at the New York Times, has, it's a big problem because it normalizes this stuff, and particularly coming from a major outlet like the Times. Actually, I will say this. Washington Post has been doing a very good job. They've had a real staff that's actually done some very good work in confronting these issues. But they're probably the only major paper that has. The LA Times has done a very poor job. I mean, they confront it a little bit. But the New York Times has been, it's been more than a disappointment. It's been tragic.
Well, and the hires, you know, whether it be Brett Stevens or, you know, I saw her interviewed today because she grew up in Squirrel Hill, Barry Weiss, who's the opinion editor at the New York Times. And she's obviously grief-stricken and on the verge of tears. And meanwhile, I'm sitting here watching.
Still defending the intellectual dark web, right?
Yeah, right. And you know, still playing footsie with Nazis, because right. That's what we mean when we say the intellectual dark web is goddamn Nazis, isn't it?
Pretty much. Well, you know, they're not. They're people who actually what they do is they soft pedal Nazi ideas in a way that makes them basically they become gateways to really far right ideology, and I'm particularly thinking of people like Jordan Peterson.
Sure. Steve King.
But yeah, well Steve King's not, he's a white nationalist.
Yeah, well, no, he's just out now.
He's not in the IDW. And it's funny how Barry Weiss gets very silent about the issue of Steve King. But, I will say, on the other hand, I am friends with Michelle Goldberg, and she does a great job. So,
Fair enough.
One of their good columnists.
But
they do have some good columnists, but they don't empower them. You know, they don't give Michelle front page treatment. They give it to Barry Weiss.
Just
a blithering moron, as far
well,
as I can.
I can't see any different, you know, with a patina of some, you know, Ivy League graces or something like that. But you know, you talk about the soft peddling. I can't help but think about the obligatory Halloween story coming out of Owensboro, Kentucky. I'm sure you've seen it. The innocent father, who innocently had this idea that he would innocently dress him and his toddler, Dave.
As Hitler.
He dressed the toddler as Hitler and dressed himself up as a member of the Waffen SS.
Oh, yeah, and the little girl was in Eva Braun, you can see.
Oh, my God. Yeah. But here's the thing. You mentioned a minute ago what the media don't understand, what they don't know, what they lack in terms of education. In the local reporting on that story, the reporter said, and the father dressed his son up as Adolf Hitler, and he dressed as, and this is the direct quote from the story, Dave, a generic German soldier. You know, the Waffen SS can be described and has been described as many things, most of them horrifying. I have never seen the word generic applied to the Waffen SS.
Yeah.
The guys with the death's head caps. And
No, that was not, those were not soldiers.
and here's the weird part of it. By way of trying to explain his way out of the situation, Daddy said, well, you know, we do a lot of historical reenactment. And I'm thinking, yeah, I wonder where your Robert E. Lee costume is, bub. And it was just a spur-of-the-moment thing, and yet they show the details. You know, he's got an iron cross medal, and he's got, the little round red with the black swastika Nazi party button on his black Waffen SS uniform. If you have a spur-of-the-moment idea to dress your kids as Hitler and Eva Braun, and you're going to be a member of the Waffen SS, and you're in Owensboro, Kentucky, Dave.
Yeah.
Where do you go to get your spur-of-the-moment Hugo Boss-inspired Waffen SS uniform? Right down to the armband and the button and the medal in Owensboro, Kentucky.
You sure got me.
I mean, that doesn't sound very spur-of-the-moment, does it? That sounds rather thought out and been working on it for a while, or just happened to have one in the closet. And if you've just happened to have a Waffen SS uniform in the closet, is it fair to say that if you go out in public dressed as a member of the Waffen SS, that you're something more than stupid?
I think you're also pretty, let's put it this way. there are various kinds of stupidity. And in addition to, obviously, lack of intellectual astuteness, there's, you know, what George Eliot called moral stupidity. And that guy is just down there, number at the low end of that, the moral stupidity chart, as well as the intellectual one. So, yeah, especially because, you know, you're infecting that these poor young kids' brains with this hate. It's like the old Rodgers and Hammerstein song about how you have to be carefully taught.
I knew that's where you were going.
Yeah. So, and those kids are being unfortunately carefully taught. And this is really the danger of the alt-right, and the real threat that they pose is that they're teaching our kids. They're getting our kids online, and they're actually targeting them. And they're trying to, they have a very effective way of recruiting them. You know, they're very insidious about it. They know how to worm their way in, and they don't give up.
What do you do if you're a parent who does not agree with this ideology, and you see it in your in your own home?
I don't know. First of all, get them offline if you can. It depends on whether they're kids or adults. So if they're adults, it's a very different story. If they're kids,
trouble. 8th grade, 9th grade, the time when they really like to get their hooks in them.
Yeah, no. Get them offline, and you know where to go? Go to the outdoors. Do outdoor stuff. Outdoor stuff is so much better for kids than screen time. And it actually helps you bond with your kids in special ways. So, go hiking, go fishing, go camping, do whatever. Get them off the fucking, sorry.
No,
get
you can use that here.
Phones. You get them off the phones and off the screens and into the real world. That's what I call the outdoors. It's the real world.
Just out of curiosity, is there another book in the offing?
Yeah, that's what I'm doing right now. I'm working up. I'm up in my island retreat right now, working on a book about conspiracy theories and how they're killing us. And hopefully, this is going to be my last book that I have to deal with this issue. But
you'd like to go back to writing about whales, wouldn't you?
I would. That's what I would like to write about whales.
I know. So, Dave, thank you so much for joining us again. Do you write at the Baffler often? Should people
No, it's just my second piece with them, but they've approached me and I like writing for them because they like me to be a writer, which most of my other places don't. Most of my other places that I write for want me to just be a reporter. And at the Baffler, I can be a writer. So I enjoy writing for them.
Well, again, Dave Dinewart, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate the generosity of your time. You always seem to have a little time when we need to try to remind people just how much danger we're in and what we're facing.
Well, you and I are old friends from way back, Bob, and I know where your heart is on this, so it's pretty easy to have a comfortable conversation with you. I hope it entertains your listeners.
Well, I hope we're something more than entertained, perhaps. Maybe energized and activated. And hey, with any luck at all, I'll see you in Philly next summer.
Yeah, that's right. Hopefully I'll get sent back out.
All right,
Bob.
Dave Dinewart, thank you very kindly.
You bet. Talk to you anytime.
All right, bye-bye. The incomparable David Dinewart, as I've said before, he is the consummate expert on white wing violence and the rise of the white wing and white wing hate, right wing if you prefer. In the United States, there is no one better on this topic in the country, period, bar none. Again, you can check in with Hate Watch blog from time to time. He's there. He's the Pacific Northwest correspondent for the Southern Poverty Law Center. And if you want to sort of get an early look at all of this, the road traveled, there are two books of his that I highly recommend. One is The Eliminationists, and the other is Alt America, The Rise of the Radical Right in the Age of Trump. Both easily available at your favorite preferably non-corporate bookseller. Thanks again to Dave. And if you've got something, if you'd like to discuss what you heard coming from Dave, I welcome you. I had a great note during the conversation from Matt in San Francisco. Subject line, in the street. I have experienced the police at a protest. At a protest outside a theater in San Francisco where Rumsfeld was speaking, I was holding one end of a banner, and the police said I couldn't stand in the sidewalk and pushed me into the gutter of an oncoming traffic lane. So there I stood, staring at the policeman as cars zipped by me only inches away at 40 miles an hour. Then, when the right-wing crowd poured out of the theater, calling us everything but a human being, they just stood back and allowed them to get up in our face when all we were doing was pointing out that some of us did not approve of war criminals having events in our city. And I would bet that just about anybody who's engaged in any sort of similar activism has experienced something like that. For one, I remember very vividly a couple of protest events where we knew that from time to time any one of us had a state police sniper's crosshairs on us. That's always inspiring. Randy in PA, in regard to these white wingers, says they're all despondent or unemployed. As an aside, some of them have fake names. True that, and yet somehow or another they managed to scrounge up enough money for 3 or 4 Glocks, plenty of ammunition, and an AR-15 that can run anywhere from $350 to as much money as you want to spend. But yeah, I get your point. Scott with a note says, a reminder for you and Dave, think back to August 1969, specifically to the night Sharon Tate and her friends were slaughtered by crazy Charlie Manson's demented family. Wasn't it his operating theory that the events of that night would trigger a race war in the country? Too bad old Charlie didn't live to see the dream being fulfilled by White Wing America. Well, I have a hard time, Scott, saying it's too bad that Charlie Manson's dead, kind of the way I have a hard time thinking it's a bad thing that Whitey Bulger's dead. He got the shit kicked out of him, stomped to death, basically, here in West Virginia at a federal prison up in Preston County, which is just to the immediate east of Monongalia County along the Pennsylvania-West Virginia border. He was 89. Whitey'd been transferred all over the country. He'd been in Florida. He'd been in Oklahoma. And the very day he got to West Virginia, he got all murdered. Bad things happen to bad people. Yeah. So, again, the lines are open. Unless you are brand new to the program, you probably know the numbers. If you are brand new to the program, well, golly. Jump in either toll-free, 844-843-4676. That's 844-THE-HORN. Or 304-640-2829. Or there's always 304-574-8178. And Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. It's all very easy, and this is probably, as far as radio conversations are concerned, it's probably one, as long as, you know, you're not a fucking Republican or a Nazi, but I repeat myself, it's probably one of the most enjoyable radio experiences you may ever have. By the way, Brother Deacon Asa says, I took one for the team. Hias, the Hebrew Immigration and Aid Society, is all over 4chan and Reddit. Not surprising. That's why this stuff is disseminated like it is, because I maintain that the more cowardly bastards who don't want to go to prison or be shot in the middle of an attack know damned good and well that the people like Cesar Sayoc and Bowers are out there, and all they have to be is just nudged a little bit, and they will go and do the filthy, bloody bidding of their cowardly superiors. So 9 minutes past the hour, and let's check in with Brad and Desi with the Green News Report. Shall we? Yes, do. Let's. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
It's Tuesday, October 30, 2018.
Brazil has elected a new president.
Election of far-right Jair Bolsonaro has grave implications for the Amazon and climate change. Plus,
Big Oil has raised $26 million to fight this initiative.
Energy and the environment are on the November 6th ballot with landmark propositions in several states.
All of those landmarks and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Who cares about global warming? Wake me up when it's America warming.
America's warming, Mr. President. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, remember when this time of year on the Green News Report, we would do green tips for Halloween?
Yes, the good old days.
Those were the days, weren't they? What do you have for us today?
Well, first up, in Brazil, environmental groups, human rights groups, and civil justice organizations are sounding the alarm over the election of extreme right-wing politician Jair Bolsonaro to the Brazilian presidency on Sunday.
As well they should.
Bolsonaro promised to enact sweeping changes to the country's political, economic, social, and environmental order, and his rule has drastic implications for the Amazon rainforest and its indigenous communities. He has suggested he would privatize and industrialize the rainforest to open it up to international agriculture, mining, and logging industries. Accelerating the destruction of the Amazon will impact on the fight to curb global warming. Bolsonaro has also suggested that, like President Trump, he intends to pull Brazil out of the United Nations Paris Climate Agreement.
Oh, great. Donald Trump finally found a friend, a far-right new leader of the largest country in the Southern Hemisphere.
Here in the U.S., the environment is on the November 6th ballot with numerous statewide initiatives. In Alaska, ballot measure 1 seeks to protect the state's revered wild salmon fisheries, the most prolific in the world, from the powerful oil and mining industry. Colorado residents, frustrated with current state law allowing fracking near homes, hope to pass Proposition 112, which would require oil and gas drilling and its accompanying noise and air pollution to be at least 2,500 feet from homes and schools and hospitals. But Big Oil has pumped millions of dollars into the state to defeat the proposition, claiming that it will put too much of the state off limits to drilling.
There is no way that the people, and a lot of times it's citizen initiatives on the ballot here, that those people can possibly go up against Big Oil when, you know, ExxonMobil makes $1 million every 2 minutes.
In Florida, offshore drilling is on the ballot. It's already banned in state waters and is wildly unpopular because it threatens Florida's prized beaches that support its billion-dollar tourism industry. After Republicans in the Florida State House voted to overturn the ban several years ago, opponents said they realized Amendment 9 is necessary to enshrine the ban in the state's constitution to make it harder for Republicans to reverse it.
Good. We'll see if it passes. You have to get something like 60% in Florida for a constitutional amendment.
In Nevada,
both sides of the argument agree renewables need to exist in Nevada, but they disagree on the pace and extent of our future renewable energy portfolio.
Question 6 would double the state's minimum requirement for electric utilities to get their energy from renewable sources. The new renewable portfolio standard would require utilities to generate 50% of their electricity from renewables like solar by 2030.
Nice.
In California, Proposition 6 is backed by Republican lawmakers who hope to repeal a 2017 increase to the state's gasoline tax, which has generated billions of dollars in revenue to pay for much-needed infrastructure, bridge, and road repairs. Opponents charge that the initiative is really only intended to goose turnout among Republican voters.
So they want to do away with this gas tax to fix roads and bridges because, you know, roads and bridges will fix themselves.
Finally, voters in Washington State will get a chance to implement the nation's first statewide carbon tax on the biggest polluters. The costs will likely be passed down to consumers, but as Vox.com energy writer David Roberts explained on a recent broadcast, Initiative 1631 has a plan to shelter low-income electricity ratepayers.
Remember, they're investing all the revenue in cleaning the state up. And 30% of all that investment has to be targeted at vulnerable and low-income communities. So it's entirely possible to construct a carbon tax that doesn't hurt low-income and middle-income people. It's entirely possible.
Not only doesn't hurt low- and middle-income people, it helps them and helps everyone at the same time, everyone, I guess. Except for the oil and gas companies?
Yeah, the oil industry so far has poured more than $26 million into defeating this carbon tax proposal. For now, it's free to pollute, and the fossil fuel industry wants to keep it that way.
Of course they do. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Don't forget to vote. This has been your Green News Report.
Let's work together. Come on, come on. Let's work together. Oh, you know together we will stand. Every boy, girl, woman, and a man.
Good bumper. Good bumper, Brad and Desi. 16 minutes past the hour. It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. You may recall that, Titanic Tuesday takes its name from something that happened many years ago now in America's fifth smallest radio market, America's most profound and hypnotic monotone referred to shells in the rock strata of West Virginia. As having been brought about by the movement of the Titanic plates. Yeah. And as a consequence, we take note of things of that nature, the Titanic intellect on this particular day. Every now and then, you just run across a story that is a perfect exemplar of the genre of Titanic right-wing intellect. This one is so weird that it almost beggars explanation. But we've known for quite some time that the mere existence of Robert Mueller is without having to do anything. It's not like there's a bunch of leaks coming out. It's not like there's press releases every day. I think they've issued maybe two. And one of them was today. And it happened today because a bizarre, kind of creepy conspiracy peddler by the name of Jack Berkman announced that come day after tomorrow, he's going to out Robert Mueller with a woman who would claim that he sexually assaulted her eons ago. Apparently, Mueller's office was already aware of it, and that's when they said that, oh, yeah, we heard about this. We've referred this over to the FBI, because it turns out that there are allegations that somebody associated with Jack Berkman had offered the woman cash to lie about Robert Mueller. This guy is so replete with rectitude that I imagine he probably shakes hands with his wife hello and goodbye. You know what I mean? But it gets titanic when you start digging into the particulars of it. A little while back, journalists started receiving pitches. And I know what they're talking about here because on any given day, I probably get 10 or 15 different pitches for the right-wing talking point of the day, whether it be satanic, leprosy-ridden, smallpox-carrying Honduran Middle Eastern members of ISIS MS-13 barreling toward the border at about 20 miles a day, tops. Whatever. Well, this pitch went out trying to get anybody to bite the baited hook, and nobody would. But a few people did start peeling away the layers of this goofy story, and it traces back to a little neo-maxi Zoom dweeby by the name of Jacob Wohl, W-O-H-L, who writes over at, well, he types at least, over at Gateway Pundit. And the whole story was connected to something called, and I think we're going to need reverb for this, Surefire Intelligence. And Surefire Intelligence was said to be part and parcel of the whole Berkman shtick. But then people began digging at Surefire Intelligence, and it turned out that it was set up by Jacob Wohl, and that it's operative in Tel Aviv was a picture of a famous Israeli model. Another of its operatives in D.C. was a picture of a guy who's an art photographer. And another one of its members was a picture of some preacher up in Michigan. Woohoo! And then it turned out that everything sort of rolled back registration-wise to... And like I said, Jacob Wohl is a neo-maxi Zoom dweeby. He's a young kid. He's 20, 21, 22 years old. He was one of those little right-winglets who made a big splash over in right-wing world and was a darling of them because he's got weird right-wing parents who apparently are very indulgent. And they let... All the numbers went to Google Voice accounts and wound up in basically Jacob's mama's basement. No, really. I wish I was kidding. So Mueller's office heard all about this and about the attempt to pay a woman and referred it over to the FBI, which was what they should have done. In case you're wondering, Jack Berkman is one of the people who was behind the Seth Rich paranoia. You know, the story that Seth Rich was murdered by... deep state operatives. Of course, that was not just run out on, that wasn't just run on out among the white wing. Some of the more credulous and wild-eyed and goofy alleged left ran with it too. Among other things, Berkman told the Daily Beast, "We're going to prove that Mueller is a drunk and a sexual abuser." Yeah. And this thing began to unravel in a real hurry. And he works, Berkman works this angle back back in 2017, according to the Daily Beast story, in the midst of the Me Too movement's beginnings, Berkman tried to get publicity and attention by saying that he represented a woman who would make charges against a member of Congress for sexual assault. And then after he called in for, called everybody in for a big press conference and everybody showed up, he walked to the podium because there was no woman, there was nobody there, there was no charge, and he said, I need to give you a big apology for wasting your time. Or then there's the time, he's a registered lobbyist in D.C., there's the time when he, not a member of Congress, he introduced a bill, which he didn't have the power to introduce, that would have banned the NFL from having any gay football players. Yeah, that didn't sit well with his brother, who said he was disgusted by it, because his brother's gay. This thing, like I said, there's a reason it's on, it's here with us on Titanic Tuesday. And here in a minute, we'll get to the whole birthright citizenship thing. 14th Amendment, you know, thing. But let's check in real quick with Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, hon, how you doing?
I'm hanging on for all I'm worth, what little sanity I got left. You know, it's like Ron and Raleigh said at the beginning of the program, the dirt's tasting better, but I still can't catch the rabbits. But I'm, you know, we're out there.
I know. I mean, I'm just kind of still dealing with the whole thing that happened. You know, just this last week with the man killing the two black people at the Kroger market. Now, can we get a timeline going, Bill?
Yeah, that's Wednesday.
Let's see.
That's Wednesday.
That was Wednesday. Thursday was the attempted bombing. And then Friday, there were more attempted bombing.
And the bomber was caught.
And the bomber was caught. Saturday, we had a person. And I use that word loosely.
Monster. The word you're looking for, Tracy, is monster.
Okay, monster. Go into a synagogue during a naming ceremony and unleash and kill 11 people. That was Saturday. And then on Saturday evening or afternoon after this, we had T-Rump saying that because that's his favorite word to use, is frankly. Had there been guards there, then not many people would have been killed. So we had some victim blaming, and that was Saturday.
It's always tricky to blame Jews for being massacred in an anti-Semitic attack. I mean, not everybody can do that.
Right,
has the brass to do that.
Right, I couldn't. It's like blaming the four little girls in Birmingham.
It's exactly like that.
You know, had they not been at church, or had they had a bomb sniffing dog?
No. Ultimately, Tracy, had they not been so daggum black?
Had it not been black, had it not been black. And at a church, you know, then they would have been killed. It's their fault because, you know, they were born black and girl, you know, and little girls. So, you know, therefore. So we have all this stuff.
Yeah, and if we back up to Jeffersontown, Kentucky for a minute, just a couple of things worth noting. Because I don't know how to put this without it coming across wrong, because it's all wrong. But you had two people of color murdered in a Kroger's in Kentucky, and you had the shooter, upon exiting the store, gun in hand, be confronted by another guy with a gun who took a defensive position behind his car and pointed his gun at the shooter. And the murderer said, if you don't shoot at me, I won't shoot at you. White people don't kill other white people.
White people. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a functional equivalent to Bowers running into Tree of Life and screaming, all Jews must die.
Yeah.
And the other thing that sort of touched my mind is that if you reach back as far as Mother Emanuel, that was an ancient, relatively speaking, within an American context, that was an ancient congregation. So too the mm-hmm. Baptist Church in Jeffersontown, Kentucky. It was literally built by the sweat and the efforts of slaves. It was a church that slaves were allowed to worship at when slavery was still a thing. And in its history, it's been burnt down and rebuilt. And then, of course, you've got Tree of Life in Pittsburgh, which was founded literally during the smoke and horror of the Civil War. And something inside me thinks, Tracy, that not to say that it would be any different if it was a church in a storefront or anything like that, you understand.
Of course not.
But there's a reason that these venerable old institutions get selected. Because it's an attack not just on the people who are being attacked and being killed, but upon heritage itself. Now maybe that's just me reading something into it.
It's not, because it's just like all these Civil War monuments that are being torn down that weren't erected after the Civil War. They were erected to enforce fear and white supremacy. Just make sure, you know, this is our part of the country, Negroes. So, you know, we want to reinforce who we are, what we are about. So don't be trying to get all uppity and try to ask for your rights.
Right, because you don't have any.
Exactly.
And it's a reminder that if we can attack you in your most venerable institutions, we can attack you anywhere and anytime. One of the stories, Tracy, that has gotten a little bit of short shrift because of just how much else is going on, comes out of Kansas. Did you hear about this one?
No.
It's the end of a case. Three white maggots were busted shortly after the election of Donald Trump for a bombing plot to bomb a mosque in Kansas. and they're at the sentencing phase. And the lawyers are arguing about what the appropriate sentence should be. Patrick Stein, Curtis Allen, and Gavin Wright, all middle-aged white guys, all members of a militia group. And they plotted to massacre Somali Muslim refugees. They were going to bomb an apartment complex and a mosque in Garden City, Kansas. And their lawyer, in terms of sentencing, because in the case of Stein, he's looking at life. They plotted it for the day after the 2016 presidential election. And yesterday, they filed a sentencing memo, in the U.S. District Court in Kansas, and they asked that the judge give Stein no more than 15 years in prison.
Why only 15?
Because he was in the words of the memo, this is a quote, an early and avid supporter of Donald Trump. And that the fevered atmosphere that surrounded the 2016 election and the words spoken by Donald Trump and his supporters pushed him over the edge and turned him into a potential mass murderer.
So
they had recordings of him describing Muslims as cockroaches.
Oh, is that all?
And they had him recorded saying that he wanted to kill Muslims with bullets that had been dipped in pig's blood. And this was within a couple of months of Donald Trump spinning that crazy-ass story that had no reality to it about Black Jack Pershing ordering his troops to shoot Muslims with bullets dipped in pig's blood. So the defense lawyers, in their sentencing memo, said, the court cannot ignore the circumstances of one of the most rhetorically mold-breaking, violent, awful, hateful, and contentious presidential elections in modern history, driven in large measure by the rhetorical China shop bull who is now our president. So not only has Donald Trump been implicated in it, no less than four federal felonies in a federal court in Manhattan, he's now been implicated by inference in a plot to bomb a mosque and an apartment complex in Kansas.
And the hits just keep coming.
Yeah. They said somebody who's normally at a 3 on a scale of political talk might have found themselves at a 7 during the election. A person like Patrick Stein, who would often be at a 7 during a normal day, might go to 11. So they want him to get a sort of a, well, what are we going to call this? The Trumpian downward departure in federal sentencing. Meanwhile, the lawyers also said that he was one of those lost and ignored members of the white working class.
Yeah, what is it? What you call economically anxious?
Yeah, economic anxiety. It's the economic anxiety defense.
That's
you want to join me and Ron out in the yard running rabbits and eating dirt?
Well, you know, it's like, okay, so does the same apply to when black people, if and when black people start doing the same things?
Because, sorry.
Okay. Because it reminds me years ago, a million years ago when I was, a little girl going to my church, my pastor at the time, I don't know if he grew up during the Depression. He probably did, or his parents did or whatever. But if he was still alive, he would be really, probably in his 90s. So he's like you were saying the other day about, people who remember the Holocaust and World War II, when you were talking about Eisenhower, or was it Eisenhower that said that anybody that would vote against Social Security, any party, that party would be gone because there was, but like you said, there were still too many people alive that remember what it was like before there was Social Security. There aren't many people who around now who remember what it was like during the Holocaust and whatnot and so forth. So it's like he was saying that back during the Depression, when people were losing their minds, it's like, well, the Depression was nothing for black people. That was an everyday occurrence.
Yeah, that was just several years that ended in numbers.
Right. Because he grew up, I believe, in South Carolina. So, so this is a black man that grew up in Jim Crow South in, the 30s and the 40s.
So, you know, the depression, this is just every day. This is just the day that ends in Y. You know,
right.
Because these are the things that we're used to. So, you know, I'm so tired of these people crying about economic anxiety because they act like they're the only ones that have been suffering with this economy.
Well, no, the reason
there were,
no,
I'm pretty
the,
sure
no,
there were
the,
black people that were never, I'm pretty sure there were black people that lived in these towns where there was mills, where there were steel mills and textile mills and auto manufacturing and all this. I'm pretty sure that everybody that worked there wasn't white. I'm pretty sure there's a few black folks working there too.
Absolutely, but you got to understand, Tracy, that their whiteness is what generates the economic anxiety, because they're not supposed to know what it feels like to be, you know, crushed.
Right.
Everybody else can, and not them.
How dare you? You know, you know how you talk about your guilty pleasure, your dirty little secret that you write. Watch.
The Morning Zoo crew over on MSNBC. Yeah.
So, you know, every so often I find myself watching The View. And
a little similar, only at least you got Whoopi and Joy going there.
Right, right. And Sunny Hoyston.
Yeah, Sunny too, yeah.
Yeah, she don't play. So today they had, the next governor of Georgia on, Stacey Abrams. And so Meghan McCain, and I don't like her at all. There's nothing redeemable there. You know, she has no redeemable qualities in my opinion. And it's not even because she's a Republican, Bob. It's
no, she's just snide.
She's a snide little contentious.
She's her father's daughter.
She is her father's daughter. And her privilege was, cause she's Miss NRA. So she tried to corner, they were talking about, they brought up the shooting in Pittsburgh, and wholly, and to my opinion, you know, because we how I feel about guns, but you know, you have the right to own a gun. You know, I'm not here to try to take people's guns away and all this. She was trying to. What did the guy use? What kind of gun did the guy use in Pittsburgh?
Three Glock pistols, with probably high capacity, and one AR-15.
Okay, so here we go. So she brings up the thing about the AR-15, and which again, I think this was just horrible that she even how she would even bring this up. She was talking about Stacey Abrams trying to get her stance on gun control or whatnot and so forth. And Stacey Abrams like, look, I used to go hunting. I know how to shoot a gun. I grew up in Mississippi. My grandmother used to take me shooting. My father, every year for his birthday, we buy him a rifle that he keeps in a gun cabinet so don't try to pull because I'm a black woman. You know, I'm coming to get your guns. But she was going on and on about the AR. So she was like, how do you feel about the AR-15? Do you think they should be banned? And she's like, if you become governor, are you going to? I mean, I'm sitting there looking at this and I'm going, is she really going there? Are you going to, round up everybody's guns if you become governor? And Stacey Abrams.
Right, because naturally, you know. She's the most liberal person that's ever run for political office since. And you're going to get your guns.
Right. And I'm sitting here going, you're using this tragedy to go, you know, you're not bringing up the fact, you know, about the Secretary of State, who is also running for governor, is suppressing votes, you know, and all this. But or, you know, just the underhanded tactics of voting in the southern state if you're not white anyhow. But this is what you choose to talk to this woman about? Really? And she just kept, you know, she just kept going on. And so then finally, you know, when she couldn't bait Stacey Abrams, she's like, I can't remember exactly what she said under her breath, but she's like, oh, you're just going to ban the gun. And I'm just like, it upset me so, because I'm like, really? People died. You know, basically, Stacey Abrams was like, I'm not trying to go with the people's Second Amendment rights. However, the problem is with guns like AR-15s and whatnot, assault rifles, is that they are dangerous. They are powerful.
They are. They ain't designed for deer hunting or squirrel hunting. Or. They are designed for people hunting.
They are designed to kill people. And there should be better. She's like, no civilian should have an AR-15. There is no reason for it. There should be something, you know. And then she even said at one point, assault weapons were banned in this country. When was that?
Well, that was during the 90s. There was an assault weapons ban.
Okay, so it can be done. But you know, because, you know, like you said the other day, but because of the NRA, which was, you know, a organization that was in when it first was, you know, founded. I didn't even realize until you said this the other day how old the NRA was or is. And I'm like, it wasn't until the NRA became weaponized, we didn't have these issues about gun control and Second Amendment rights and all that. Or am I wrong in stating that?
No. The NRA became a wild-eyed right-wing, they became the paramilitary arm of the Republican Party starting with the militarization of the Republican Party and the religionization of the, you know, in the 70s. You know, it's sort of, it parallels in track with the rise of Jerry Falwell. Falwell became the religious arm of the Republican Party, and the NRA became the paramilitary, gunned up arm of the Republican Party. So they wanted to provide a niche for whatever somebody needed to have in order to be radicalized and weaponized into the cult of Reagan.
Okay, gotcha.
I mean, that's... But yeah, the NRA begins. It's founded, I think, in New York in the aftermath of the Civil War by a couple of guys who were officers in the Union Army who noticed that the Southerners... say whatever else you will about them, treason, were a hell of a lot better shots than they were. Because the South was, you know, more rural, and if you took a gun and you put it in the hands of some guy from, you know, just off the boat from Ireland or and New York or Boston or whatever, they tended to freak out a little bit on the battlefield. And that's why, they saw that as one of the reasons that the South, outmanned and outgunned as they were, had the successes that they did. So they founded an organization that would promote responsible firearm ownership and marksmanship. Because this was at a time when, and we have, again, it's another one of those things nobody's still alive to tell us. But there was a time in the aftermath of the Civil War when the Union wasn't entirely certain that it might have to march its ass back in there to enforce the outcome of the war. And in fact, they did. It was called Reconstruction, and it only went away when a guy lost the popular vote and made a deal to pull the federal troops out of the South and leave the recently freed slaves to the tender mercies of the recently dispossessed slave owners. I mean,
that's
history. It's just, yeah.
And that went well, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was, something on the order of 90 years of pure bloodthirsty hell.
Mm-hmm. Like you said, it's just U.S. history that's not really taught. So now we're back on the time. So that was today. And then let's see, was it yesterday or was it today that that person that was elected into office, Dolt 45, decided that because I'm the president, I can get rid of the part of the 14th Amendment that says if you're born here, you become a citizen. So now, because I'm the president, so that
yeah, but there's one thing that attaches to all of this, and I want to get this right. On the one hand, I saw remarks all day long by people saying, "Hey, don't go for the tinsel, don't fall for the shiny object. There's no way he can do this."
Oh, I know he can.
Well, hold on.
But then again, what did they do with the Voting Rights Act?
Right, and remember, John Roberts was just going to call balls and strikes. Until he threw the Voting Rights Act out of the game.
Right.
But so I understand don't fall, and we'll go into the tinsel aspect of this in a second, Tracy. But the debate on the 14th Amendment, and there are, it's in the congressional record. They knew what they were proposing with the 14th Amendment. And they wanted to make sure that in the aftermath of the Civil War, citizenship was clearly defined. And they even made reference not just to freed slaves and the children of freed slaves, but in the debate they made reference to people, to babies born to Chinese immigrants, because you're out on the West Coast, and the history of the oppression of Asian peoples is its own brand of horror. And so they made abundantly clear, it doesn't matter what your status here is, if your baby is born here, your baby is an American citizen.
Period.
And so when he talks about eliminating birthright citizenship by executive fiat, it is not entirely irresponsible or unreasonable to wonder how far it will go. Because theoretically, it could remove the citizenship of every person of color and every non-white person in this country. And so for privileged white people to say, hey, don't fall for the tinsel, don't believe that stuff, it can't possibly happen, well, unless you're one of the people who could wind up theoretically losing citizenship out of it, it's probably not good to say that.
Well, like your girl Susan Sarandon.
She can be yours. She ain't mine.
No. Just because we have estrogen in breasts. No. Talking about, voting for Jill Stein and all this. And, the, what does she call it? The apocalypse and all that.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Miss Thang, because I'm trying to step away from using the word bitch or see you next Tuesday. But it won't affect because, you privileged white woman, you. What happened on, in November 2016 and then subsequently, as soon as when was he inaugurated? January the what, 2017?
January the 20th, 2017.
January 2017. You're rich. You're white. You don't have to worry about health care. You don't have to worry about your son being pulled over by a cop and being shot. You don't have to worry about...
Yeah, his presidency, the negative effects of his presidency are never going to touch her.
Is never going to touch her.
The Republicans could completely eliminate Social Security. It would never touch Susan Sarandon or any of her privileged pals.
It would never. They could eliminate Medicare. It would not affect her in any shape, form, or fashion. And see, this is the problem with some of these people. You know, when they sit in their lofty towers and they declare, well, this is what's best for the country, and these, you know, the purity police and all of this. Not to say that there's nobody black in the purity police, but from, you know, I don't know. I mean, I take that back. I've met a couple members of the purity police. This young black man that's a millennial and who is gay. And, you know, because we had this discussion last Christmas, because we were at a friend's house for Christmas. And he was going on and on about why he didn't vote and all this. And we just, us older folks, you know, that's scary when the older folks are just in their 50s, right? And we just looked at him, like, really? You know, you think by not voting for Hillary Clinton, you did something. You stopped. You proved your point. And, you know, you can live with yourself because, you know, I didn't vote for Hillary Clinton. I was pure and, you know, and all this because, like, and I'm thinking, I said, look, you really think I wanted to vote for Hillary Clinton? I remember her talking about super predators, okay? I remember about how her husband was probably one of the greatest Republicans of all when it came to social services for poor people. And three strikes and all this. I remember all these things, okay? But when it came down to, you know, I didn't know what kind of president. I knew what kind of president Donald Trump would be just from listening to how during the whole camp, you know, during the primaries, during that campaign, I knew that he was less than human. I knew that he was a racist. I knew he was a misogynist. I knew he was an idiot. And I knew that he was not qualified to run this country. Not because of the fact that he wasn't a politician. That had nothing to do with it. It's not because he wasn't a politician. It was because he was wholly inadequate to do anything to represent this country as the president of the United States. He was one of those white men who have the privilege of failing up. If it hadn't been for the fact that his father had money, and all, I mean, the man, how many times has he been bankrupt? And you,
six.
This is who you want to run our, you know, you want this person to run the country? But you're so concerned about, you know, Hillary and her email. You bought into the Kool-Aid of, you know, Hillary this, Hillary that, Hillary this, Hillary that. You know, she became the Republican boogeyman of everything that was wrong with this country. Okay. And now look what we have. Look at what we have. We have a man that has promoted, who is part and parcel and responsible for how many hate crimes since he's became in office. He is responsible because of his rhetoric. I mean, because like he said during the campaign.
Yeah, it's the phrase that Dave Nywert gave us earlier. It is scripted terrorism, Tracy.
Scripted. I mean, when you're standing in front of a bunch of hopped up crazy people and you're telling them that I miss the good old days when you could just throw people out, or if you kick somebody's ass, I'll pay your legal fee, or I can walk into the middle of Fifth Avenue or whatever he said and I can shoot somebody and nothing will happen to me. And you wonder why. And you know, because I heard some of your conversation with Dave. I didn't hear it all, but I heard enough to know that, you know, I didn't hear what you were talking about the multi-million dollar media, how, you know, this everybody is a good guy. Nobody's calling this man out for what he's doing for fear of reprisal. And since nobody and basically nobody is responsible. Nobody is as apt to say, except for, you know, people like you and, you know, probably and Malloy and all this. Nobody is coming out and saying this man is responsible for what is going on in this country. He has weaponized, and how many people do you think? Like you said, you know, you said yesterday it might be, you know, the number, because you and me are the same when it comes to ciphering, trying to do percentages and shit like that.
Yeah, it never works out well.
I got to get a calculator out. But, you know, by the time you know, what I did hear before I had to talk to my mom was, you know, you had a low number. You said about 600,000 yesterday. And Dave said it's probably closer to a million.
Dave said it's probably in the millions, Tracy.
Millions with, so we, millions, Zzz. Plural.
Yeah, millions. Because,
know,
and again, I go back to the reference, and I keep going back to it, not because I like the people, but, you know, when somebody tells you, when somebody is an expert on something, and Steve Bannon and Milo Yiannopoulos are experts on who supports Trump, when they tell you that fully 50% or more of the Republican base are alt-right, believe them.
Right.
And so if you've got millions and you know that with a few carefully placed words, you can weaponize a number, any number, then that, to a prudent citizen of a prudent nation, that's a clarion call that your nation has a humongous problem. And I firmly believe, and I know how dangerous that word is.
Yeah, when you talk about belief, I remember what it, that.
Most dangerous word in the English language, but I believe that this country has a horrible white supremacy problem that goes, as far as the millionaire media are concerned, largely unacknowledged and for the most part ignored.
It's been a Bob, how, but let's face it, it has been ignored since the KKK, since the black city in Oklahoma that they, you know, the Black Wall Street, and they, you know, they leveled that. And Ross was in Florida. Why can't I think of these cities? You know, the race riots that have happened, and when I say, see, there's uprisings, and then there's flat out race riots. When you have mobs of white people going into black towns and burning and killing and leveling everything that's black, and nothing happens to these people, and this was how many years? Late 1800s, early 1900s, and then let's not forget the lynchings. You know, this is nothing new. Again, of course, the biggest, you know, thing, you know, slavery. White supremacy is nothing new in this country. White supremacy has run on white supremacy since its inception. So, you know, the only difference between now and then is that we have 24/7 news cycle. And we now have a president that has no qualms about being racist. I mean, not since Woodrow Wilson joined, you know, the Birth of a Nation, you know, in the White House saying that it was history written in lightning. Did I get that right?
You got that right.
Okay. Not since Woodrow Wilson have we had a president that is proud of his racism. He doesn't even use dog whistles, Bob. He doesn't. He doesn't have to. Like, you know, at least Reagan and Bush and Nixon and everybody else had the common courtesy, you know, to use, you know, law and order and all the other dog whistles that they've used over the last how many hundreds of, you know, last 70, 80 years. at least they had the common courtesy to use the dog whistles. So, you know, and of course, the people that they were talking about knew who the hell that they were talking about. And we just looked at each other like, really? Do you think we're stupid? We know what you're talking about. You know, please. You know, we exactly know who what you're saying. But, okay, whatever. So, but this man doesn't even care because he doesn't have to care. He is playing to his base. These people have been waiting for how many decades for a president like Trump, Bob? Like you said, when you were talking about...
A generation, at least.
At least a generation. At least ever since Johnson signed in the Bill of Rights. I'm not the Bill of Rights. You know what I'm trying to say.
Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act.
The Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, when he signed those into law, what did he say about the South, Bob? We have lost the South for a generation. Am I right? Is that what he said?
Yeah, and that was optimism.
And that was optimism. And that was in 1960 what, Bob?
What, 65, 66?
65, 66. So I hadn't been born yet. You about 3 years old, right?
Yep.
So these people, I mean, they have been pissed off, they have been pissed off since the Civil War. So then, you know, generation after generation of this white privilege of these people saying, how dare you take our, you know, they have not wanted anybody in this country since, except for white people. And the white people, and then the newly minted white people, by those people that I mean are the Irish, the Italians, and the Jews, because remember, they weren't considered white back in the day.
Oh, no, no, no. And the whole reason that organization that Bowers used as his excuse to slaughter 11 elderly people so enervated him was because their original mission, when they started at the beginning of the 20th century, late 19th, the Hebrew Immigration and Aid Society, was to help resettle Jews fleeing the pogroms of Europe. But because a central tenet of Judaism is, and by the way, it's also a central tenet of Islam, that you are obliged to be decent to your guests. And within the tenets of Judaism, that you must welcome the stranger among you.
And that's why
they expanded their mission beyond Jews fleeing pogroms, and so they actually have a government contract and a pretty extensive budget, and they're the people who go in when you're new to this country, whether you're fleeing. Being gassed by a Russian-backed government in Syria, or whether you're fleeing massacres in Sudan, or whether you're fleeing drug cartels in Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador, HIAS is the group that goes in, makes sure there's food in the fridge, helps you get settled into a place to live, teaches your kids how to get on the bus and go to school, maybe looks into some language training, all to make you comfortable in your new home here in the land of the free and the home of the brave. And this drove Robert Bowers up a damn tree. And as Brother Deacon Asa tells us, it is the 4chan and Reddit are just filthy, literally, with people with white wingers losing their minds over HIAS.
And like you said, you hadn't even heard of HIAS until when?
Until Saturday.
Right. So these people have been not even seeking a media presence for how many years that they've been in.
And you know they're not out there, you know, carrying signs or engaging in protests. It's actually pretty prosaic work. And HIAS didn't ask to be on the right wing goes out there and sees that anything that has Jewish or Hebrew or there's other organizations, and I'm sure they hate them too. And you know, the Klan has a history of hating Catholics.
Mm-hmm. Because they're not, because you know, they answer to the Pope.
Well, right, and because
they're not real Christians,
and because not white. See, Lily White Catholics didn't used to be white. In the 19th century, Irish people were portrayed by editorial cartoonists and caricaturists. Irish people were portrayed as apes.
They used to call Irish, excuse my, you know, niggas turned inside out. That's what they used to call the Irish.
And they were rapidly weaponized, the Irish were. Remember, the draft riots in New York City were a result of weaponizing Irish immigrants and telling them that, you know, they had they didn't have a dog in this hunt. And so when the Irish rioted in New York City, the first thing they did was look for any free black people they could find and stomp the hell out of them. And mm-hmm. then, as Ron points out, yeah, there's Tulsa, Oklahoma, 1921, Rosewood, Florida, 1923, Wilmington, North Carolina, 1898. And as Ron points out, that ain't all.
No. Thank you, Ron.
And so I don't buy into it. I don't buy into this, can't we all just get along, you know, bullshit. And you know, to have Donald Trump say, well, we've got to stamp out anti-Semitism, and it's going to take all of us working together, and we've got to have unity, by the way.
Oh.
The press are the enemy of the people.
The press are the enemy of the people, by the way.
Right. But let me back up for just a minute, because I do want to discuss the tinsel aspect of this 14th Amendment business. This, and Dr. John pointed this out to me early this morning, and he's got a great eye for this sort of thing.
When the first thing that I thought of, and that was what I was going to ask, when he made that announcement, I was, you know, what is Dr. John thinking, and what has he talked to you about? So please, what did he say?
Well, what Dr. John pointed out is that this is the worst kind of profit-driven so-called journalism, because the way this story starts is Axios, which curiously sounds a lot like Access now, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Axios gets formed by a couple of cats named Mike Allen and Jim Vandehay, and they are, I guess, information entrepreneurs. You know, you can see them on the various cable, the TV programs and whatnot. So they get Jim Vandehay and an alleged journalist by the name of Jonathan Swan from Australia, who I've seen pop up on, you know, the MSNBC Morning Zoo crew from time to time. They get a sit down with Donald Trump. And so they ask him, what about birthright citizenship? And away he goes. Because they know that the fundamental truth of Donald Trump is that if you put once you drop the nickel in, you can walk away and the machine will just run. And so they said, "Oh, Mr. President,
the jukebox was the
what about birthright citizenship?" And he's off and running and gone. Meanwhile, they hardly even follow up, and one of them is sitting there goddamn giggling. And so immediately the promos go out. Ooh, watch our new Axios show on HBO when you can see all of this interview with Donald Trump. And out of all of this, Tracy, I coined a new term. Some people have called it access journalism. You know, it's the reason in the millionaire media that you don't get hard questions. It's why, for instance, back when he was still alive, Tim Russert would rather have keeled over dead on the set than to ask a hard question of somebody like Count Dicula.
Right.
And it's why David Gregory stood up there and rapped with Karl Rove. You remember the MC Rove clip?
No, I don't.
Look it up later. Don't have a full stomach. They crave, they live for access to these power players. All right? So the term for that is access journalism, but looking at the way this whole filthy thing went down today, I sort of said, no, it's access infotainment. Because, one, it ain't journalism.
No.
And Axios doesn't appear to be a journalism outlet. It appears to be an information entertainment outlet. It's more like a PR firm, if you will. And so what they're practicing is access infotainment. And they actually created the story. They knew going in that they were going to create this story in order to promote their television program. It's in a way, it's sort of like, do you remember last week when we were going to have a 10% middle class tax cut, even though Congress wasn't in session? You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
It's that same sort of thing. It's a story out of whole cloth. It's out of thin air. And it's not really news. But God damn if I can't go to social media today for seeing people going absolutely hog wild over this 14th Amendment stuff. But again, I balance that, Tracy, against the notion that unless your ass is on the line, you'd best not be telling people not to worry about it.
Well, because when I heard it, because the first thing that came to my mind, you know, when people were saying, well, he can't do this, blah, blah, blah. And like I said, the first thing that came to mind was, you know, when they gave us gay marriage but took away voting rights. That's the first thing that hit me. And I'm thinking, how could this, and, you know, when people say, well, it can't happen, first of all, I'm like, well, this can't happen. But then again, I thought about it hit me about, well, who would have thought they would be able to take away people's voting rights?
There we go.
So, and as a result, look, you know, we have, you know, these wonderful states with voter ID and the, you know, and the, what is this, the match laws and all.
Yeah,
these,
exact
all
match
things.
And no PO boxes.
Exact match. And no PO boxes, and you know, if you're a felon, any and everything to, you know, to keep people from being able to vote. Because once the Supreme Court says racism is over, you got the black guy in, you know, nobody's going to keep anybody, you know, from voting. We don't have any problems in the South at all. And there were voter suppression laws in going on before they gutted the Voting Rights Act. So of course, they were on the ready once they gutted it, and nobody and I guess what bothers me the most about, you know, when they gutted the Voting Rights Act is that nobody really said anything. There wasn't. I don't remember this outrage. And what are you doing? And why isn't anybody stopping this? Why isn't the Department of Justice, you know, still making sure that that people can still vote? You know, like I said, I live in California, so a lot of this stuff that happens in your neck of the woods, you know, and in southern states and states like Arizona and all these other places, they don't directly affect me. It's because I live in California, but they affect the country. Therefore, it's going to affect me eventually, because what's going to happen is when you're telling a bunch of people that they can't vote, when you're in Georgia and there's 53,000 people that have been disqualified from voting because whatever, you know, let's make up a reason today, it's going to affect me, because that means the rest of the country is going to get fucked. And that means I don't want to leave California. Or even worse, that stuff, the tentacles of what's happening down south and in these other states.
Yeah, I realize you're sort of acknowledging the bubble, Tracy, but don't think that it isn't out there too, because it is. There's a guy running to try to save his seat in one of those weird ass right wing southern California districts. And he's running ads saying his opponent is a supporter of terrorism because he's half Palestinian and half Mexican.
Right. So it's like, I mean, we have what's going on right now. You know, we got some dog whistling stuff going on. And there's two guys running for state superintendent of schools. There's Marshall Tuck, who's basically, you know, he's a charter school right-wing millionaire tool of Betsy DeVos and, you know, the corporate charter school programs. And then we have Thurman, who is I don't remember if he's an educator or what, but Thurman doesn't have the kind of money that Marshall Tuck has. So Marshall Tuck, so here's some of the dog whistle stuff that his ads were saying, you know, referring to why we shouldn't now, you know, vote for Tony for Thurman, who is a brother, by the way.
Why am I not surprised?
You know, the Obama administration sanctioned him. The ACLU filed a lawsuit against him. You hear what I'm saying, right, Bob?
Yep.
He's responsible for schools and underrepresented, underprivileged, basically, and schools. I mean, he's saying all the words to make black people say, well, maybe we shouldn't vote for him because he doesn't care about black people. And then you got Marshall Tuck saying his ads say, you know, that he's uplifted schools and underperforming schools. And stuff like that. I'm paraphrasing the ads, but you get the gist, right? And for every maybe one, I don't, like I said, I hear there, Marshall Tuck's ads are on every hour on the, you know, it's like his ads are just on and on the radio, on television, Marshall Tuck, Marshall Tuck, Marshall Tuck. Whereas the guy that should be our superintendent, the state superintendent of schools, I mean, he has all the endorsements that, he should have, but he doesn't have the money or the airtime that Marshall Tuck is getting because, you know, he doesn't have the backing of, like, you know, the DeVos and all these people. And it's sickening. And like I said, there is the bubble of California, but I'm not stupid. Like I said, because of what's happening in other parts of this country, like I said, you didn't let me finish, the tentacles are coming here in California. Like I said, I'm not saying that it won't happen in California. I mean, let's face it. Remember, we had how many Republican governors?
Mm-hmm.
So California is not immune. It is not. We've just been fortunate in the last, you know, a few years that we have, you know, and this our, you know, our last election cycle, we have in California, you know, the state, you know, we have the legislative branch and the governorship. So, you know, like I said, we're not immune because there's enough Trumpansies out here too. as evident about the guy that she says running and saying that this man, his opponent, is a terrorist or promotes terrorism just because he's Palestinian and Hispanic. So no, I'm not deluded. Trust.
Oh no, I don't think you are. I don't think you are.
I just know that it's not as bad out here as it is other places. But then again, if we get somebody in our a state superintendent of schools like Marshall Tuck, it will become problematic. Because this is not the first time that he's run for office. Fortunately, the last time he ran, he was defeated. But I don't know about this time. Because like I said, his ads are just enough that if you don't know who he is and what he's about, because again, you know, voters' memories are, you know, have the retention of a special needs gnat. So who's going to remember who he was 4 years ago? I don't remember the ads 4 years ago. So now that he's running again
and reinvented
and reinvented. Who knows? Because again, if he's one of these, because we've gotten a few. We had about a year ago, there was a special election. We had two seats open in LA Unified School Board, and the people that were running vastly different. One, you know, the two that I voted I didn't vote for them because they weren't representing my district. But they, of course, they were definitely left-leaning people who, you know, wanted to change the way education and subject matter and stuff like that, and making sure that money went to the schools that needed the money, blah 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 blah. Whereas the other two were definitely for charter schools, and of course, the two that were pro charter schools were the ones that got elected. Now that's just here in LA Unified. Now, what happens if the state superintendent of schools is pro-charter schools? Then we're going to have a problem in California as far as California schools are concerned. So, like I, you know, it's just that we need to be more aware and, you know, get out to people to get out to vote and stuff like that. But it's this country, there's something horrible happening to this country. And, you know, this, all, like you said, this kumbaya bullshit that Trump is spewing. It's never been, this has never been a kumbaya moment country. I don't ever think it will be a kumbaya moment country. But at least before we had Trump, there was a certain amount of decency.
Well, there was an effort, and there was also an effort to tamp it down. What Trump did, and it goes back to Obama's presidency when he started the birther movement, was he gave people license to bring it out in the open.
I got
clips tucked away in here of a guy at the MAGAT rally. Oh, I forget where it was in the last week, who said, "Yeah, wait, maybe I can find him, because this is just too good to pass up." It was before, I think it was before Cesar Sayoc. Was caught. Here he is. And this is, you know, oh my God. Oh, it was in Charlotte, North Carolina. And so you got this pasty-faced, doughy old white dude in a MAGAT hat, who is being interviewed, of course, by it. And that's another question. Is there any value anymore journalistically of sticking microphones in front of in maggots' faces?
Right.
I'm not entirely certain that there is. But let me see if I can get this to roll. Yeah, here we go.
Barack Obama probably sent his to himself, and Hillary Clinton probably sent hers to herself.
So you don't think this guy actually sent these bombs to these officials?
No, probably not.
Why?
They probably had it done. They may have paid him to do it.
What would be the upside of that?
Trying to bring people feeling over to their side.
And against Trump.
Yeah.
Got that, Tracy? Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton mailed bombs themselves. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, it turns out that dude had a list with over 100 names on it. Among other things, the FBI paid a courtesy call on Michael Avenatti and told him he was on the bomb list. And they're quietly going about and saying, hey, and they're warning people, because who knows where he disseminated this list to. But yeah, they went to Avenatti and said, yeah, you were going to get a bomb. And of course, I about halfway freaked out yesterday when I got up in the morning and found out there was another bomb. This one was mailed to CNN Center in Atlanta, where I used to work. And this after that conversation in which Steve said, Steve from Georgistan, referencing Ms. Karen's work with the Postal Service, said, you know, go out and thank your postal worker. And I don't think Karen was anywhere near where that happened, but, you know, goddamn.
Mm-hmm. You know, because I'm not the most, you know, I wouldn't say learned. I don't have the history knowledge that you have as far as like dates and stuff like that. But I know enough just from my personal experience of being a black person in this country, of the history of how black people have been treated in this country. And just from my own, not even from the education that I got in school, because I didn't really get a lot of education about black history until my late 30s when I decided to go back to school. So a lot of the stuff that I've learned on my own, just like the history that of gay people in this country that I've learned since I realized that I am a lesbian. So I've learned about things that, you know, that affect me personally. And so because of who I am with, you know, that, you know, you get that bit, what you used to call the Venn diagram, and how many, you know, parts of, you know, who I am intersect with other people, you know, woman, black, lesbian, you know, mental health issues, you know, felon, you know, so all these things that affect me, that affect all other people as well. But because of who I am and because I can be at times if, when the meds are working right, Bob, I'm a naturally curious person. And so when I'm feeling right with the world and things are clear to me, that's when that curiosity thing goes in. And then I start doing my research and finding out where I stand as a black person, black woman, black lesbian, you know, black felon, all these things, how it affects me, therefore it affects other people. Because I am not the only black, lesbian, liberal, felon, whatever, with mental health issues in this country. I'm not, because, I mean, there may not be a whole bunch of us, but there's plenty of people who are just like me. I mean, you're not a woman, you're not black, but you're liberal. You care about people, you love this country. So that's how we have so many things that intersect with other people. So we may not intersect as far as cultural or race, but we intersect because we love our country. We care about other people. We're terrified to see where this country is going, and we're doing what we can in our small portion of this world and this country to try to bring about change.
We're not consumed with hate. We are not motivated by fear.
We're not motivated by fear. We do get scared.
We're not stupid. We're rational people. We know that, you know, there is a sense of urgency. We do realize, like you said, you cannot put out, you know, a Hillary Clinton bumper sticker on your car, or Bernie Sanders, or a lawn sign on your lawn because of where you live. I can't put Bernie Sanders. I could put a Hillary Clinton. I could put a Hillary Clinton bumper sticker on my car, and I will be fine. Unless I'm going on a road trip and wind up going through winding up in Mississippi or Louisiana or whatever, that bumper sticker, because I have enough sense to realize what I'm dealing with, that I must take that bumper sticker off my car.
Right, let's take a moment here, Tracy. If you've got, say, let's say you live in a liberal enclave. Because this goes back to what Dave Nywert was saying about both sides don't do it. If you've got a Trump Pence bumper sticker on your car and you live in a liberal enclave, you don't have to worry that somebody's going to slash your tires.
No, they're not going to rock. They're not going to firebomb my house. They're not going to, destroy, poison my dog or anything like that because I had a Trump Pence. Lawn sign on my lawn. That's not going to happen.
Precisely.
And this, when you played that clip of the man that said that, that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama sent the bombs to themselves, when it was announced initially about the bombings, the attempted bombing, and I don't know who it was. It was some reporter that actually had the nerve, before, they found the van with the stickers and the pictures of people in the crosshairs and the reverence to Pence and Trump and all that. There were those that were trying to say that, don't automatically believe that it could be the left just trying to, get sympathy. You know what I'm saying? They
yeah.
actually try to go there. And when they said that, I was just like, because I don't get into Twitter wars or anything like that. Like, it took everything I had this morning when I was listening to Meghan McCain trying to bait Stacey Abrams. And I was just like, it took everything I had not to jump on Twitter at that precise moment and say to Meghan McCain, what are you doing? Why do you take this? I know you're I got it, because there was a comment she made a little while ago about something that happened. She's like, well, it wouldn't happen to me because I have a gun. And I'm like, ooh, really?
Well, the cops in Pittsburgh had a gun and three of them still got shot. But hey,
right.
lest we be completely consumed in our worries and our fears and our sense of, holy fuck. There is a little bit of good news out there, Tracy. There's a little bit of good news out there. There's some signs of hope. One of them comes out of Mississippi.
M-I, crooked letter I.
Mm-hmm.
crooked letter I, humpback I. And what, pray tell, could that be?
A little town called Picayune, Mississippi. They had a Halloween... had a Halloween costume contest. Oh, dear.
No.
And so some dude showed up at the bar called Mutt and BC's. And he showed up at the bar in a Klan robe and hood, carrying the Mississippi flag that's got the Confederate battle flag in the corner of it.
Mm-hmm.
The proprietors of Mutt and BC's Bar and Grill in Picayune, Mississippi, walked up to dude and said, you gotta leave. And don't ever come back.
Well, praise God.
That shit ain't welcome here. And so the bar itself said, We do not tolerate or condone racism at any level of our business, customers, or staff. Everyone's welcome, and we do have all walks of life and all races that patronize our place. And the mayor of Picayune, a guy named Ed Pinero, he said the city of Picayune does not support any type of racist or derogatory actions, period, whether it's true to life or a costume party. It's just unacceptable behavior in Mississippi, goddamn.
Okay, well, that's a Mississippi goddamn moment. Speaking of not so much a Mississippi goddamn moment, remember how I was talking about the young man that was going on about Hillary Clinton and why he didn't vote for her and all that?
No.
Do you watch Madam Secretary? Probably not.
No,
I don't see you watching a lot of broadcast television. Well, anyway, on Sunday's episode, her daughter was working on a campaign for this probably Democrat and what have you, and there was a press statement that he was about to go or a speech or something, and she was going over the speech, and she's like, oh, there's something wrong, he left something out, and so she asked him about it. He's like because it was about student loan reform, about student loan forgiveness, right? And because he's like, well, I need to get elected first so I could, you know, there's certain things that I can and cannot say that I really want to work on and I want to reform, but let's get me to the table first before I can do anything, right? But, of course, being the typical millennial, she quits the campaign and decides that she's not going to vote. So her mother, who is, you know, the Secretary of State, you know, that she questioned her, and she's like, so how much, what percentage of what he's working on do you agree with? She's like, you know, 90, she said, well, about 95%. And she's like, basically, yes. And she went off, because she was saying, you know, her daughter was like, you know, us millennials, we're tired and we're not going to take this anymore. And we're going to hold people to task and blah, 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 you know. And when she said that, the first thing that came up to, you know, the sparkle fart pony unicorn purity brigade, and you know, and her point was, nobody is going to be 100% of who you want as a politician, no one. But if somebody has the majority of who you want who you want to represent you as a candidate, then you need to get your ass up and vote. And like when she made that speech the other night, it made me think about you and all the things that, you know, and the 2016 election. It's like, nobody is going to be 100% of who you want. Hell, when you're in a relationship with somebody, are you and Agnes?
Agnes. I'm sure I'm not 100%. Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm near enough to be to warrant being with 25 years. So I got that going for me.
Thank you. So are they near enough to your principles and who you are as a person to be in a relationship with? That's no different than who you're voting for at this point. We are in war. We are fighting for our very fucking lives. And these people, these purity police, and all this other stuff. When you're looking for reasons to not vote for somebody because they're not 100% pure, then we're going to wind up with who we have now as president, because people stayed home because they couldn't fathom Hillary Clinton because her email, or Benghazi, or whatever the case may be. Okay, am I preaching?
No, testify.
You know, we wouldn't be. Bob is, like I said, Hillary Clinton was not my first choice. But I knew enough to know that if Hillary Clinton was Madam President at this point, we wouldn't be having this conversation about people shooting up synagogues because they've been weaponized and radicalized. We wouldn't have people walking up and shooting black people. Well, never mind that. I take that back. That probably would be happening. But we wouldn't have people mailing out bombs because the president said that these people are the enemy of the state, because these people had the nerve to speak out against Trump. So we wouldn't, you know, there might be plenty of people that will speak, will have been speaking out against Hillary Clinton, but I guarantee you, they wouldn't be sending out bombs to her detractors.
No.
I am correct in that.
You're absolutely right.
There was plenty of people that, you know, that had, you know, I was one of those people, you know, I had issues with Bush, and, you know, I have issues with everything that Trump has said, but I'm not going to send a bomb out to him or to any of his supporters. That's not how I run, and that's how most decent people do run. So, again, for all you people who stayed home in November of 2016, thank you. Thank you very much. Because now we have at least two more years of, and like you said yesterday, don't be trying to run around if there is a blue wave, wasting time on impeachment, because that is going to do nothing but build up his base to make sure that that asshole is reelected in 2020. I'm just saying. We got to look at the big picture. And like you said, stop him in his tracks for the rest of 2018, 2019, and 2020. And pray to God that who's ever running against him in 2020 that we don't run into the purity police and wind up with him for four more years after 2020. So in January of 2021, we're not reliving this nightmare again. And there you go.
Exactly. Well, one more little piece of good news.
Okay.
Remember Steve Cantaloupe's King out in Iowa? The guy who basically...
No.
The Steve Cantaloupe's King, the right-wing guy who said that for every one... Dreamer, who's a high school valedictorian, there are 100 who are running drugs over the border. And he said those 100.
Seriously, I don't know who. I never even heard that. Oh, great.
Well, he said they've got calves the size of cantaloupes. I know, can't keep up. They got calves the size of cantaloupes. He says.
Calves? What the hell is that?
They got really big, well-developed lower legs from carrying all them bales of drugs.
Oh, okay. Because I was trying to understand what it meant, but you had to explain it to me. Okay, great. Thank you.
Well, he's been in office since 2003. He's been 8 terms in the House of Representatives, and his district in Iowa has reliably sent him back time after time after time. And he might even, recently he went over to Austria and appeared on a right-wing program called Uncensored and started talking about the risks of white genocide, that white people are going to be outbred by the brown people. He just came all the way out as, you know, full-on white supremacist. He'd probably give the salute if he probably does when nobody's watching, and when some are.
When nobody's watching.
Back in 2014, he said that if he opposed aid after Hurricane Sandy, because he said that everybody who got FEMA aid would spend it all on Gucci bags and massage parlors. Well, he's got a lead he's out in front in his congressional race for next Tuesday.
Because you said it was good news.
It is good news. His lead is one fucking point.
Oh.
And this is a guy who's never really had to campaign before. So we'll find out. It's sort of an extrapolation based on what Dave Neiwert was saying about how many white wingers and white supremacists there are. he may just be out of a job, and he'll have to go find himself some work at a Nazi think tank or something. And the last little
which
he, and
which
the
can.
And the what?
Which he can, which
oh,
there probably
no,
won't be a problem with.
That's what Wingnut Welfare's for. And the last piece of good news is that the artist who insists that he be referred to as the has apparently broken up with his Superman daddy.
Oh, what has happened, Wuz? What happened?
He got on Twitter and he said, "My eyes are now wide open, and now I realize I've been used to spread messages I don't believe in. I am distancing myself from politics and completely focusing on being creative!" Exclamation point! Exclamation point! Exclamation point! Because I get, they went too far by trying to drag him into this Blexit bullshit.
Now, what was what was that? Because
That was the meeting of the Young Black Leadership Council of the of TPUSA, you know, Toilet Paper USA.
That's the text that I sent you the other day.
Yeah, and that was the folks that were standing there when he was talking the other day and started yelling, "Soros, lock him up!" Right.
Right.
After Soros had been George Soros had been sent a bomb. Well, they tried to co-opt, apparently, and I don't know how willing he was or wasn't, but they tried to co-opt Kanye West into it, and all of a sudden it ain't cool anymore. And apparently he doesn't want to go and shriek about the Unabomber in the White House anymore.
So he's done doing his tomcoonery?
I will leave that up to you, Tracy. Because
when I came up with that the other day, I said, "Uncle Tom Coonery, that's just awesome."
Well, you got your own fan club here. I mean, I got a note here from Darlene in Connecticut saying, "Awesome, love you, Tracy. Love how you're speaking from the heart." And Steve in New York says, "Tracy, preach." And then Michael in Madison says, in the subject line, "Kanye, hold the phones, Bob." Uh-oh. The way I read that was that he broke up with hucksterist Candace Owens over Blexit, but that he said nothing else about abandoning Daddy Trump. Well, I guess, yeah, Michael's probably right. Michael's better at that than I am. Mm-hmm. And but, you know, hope springs eternal.
Yeah. I was watching, there was a clip the other day that I had watched it before, but it became even more resonant. I hate it when I can't come up. It became even more, what's the word I'm looking for? It was more perfect, or whatever the word was, when there's a guy on, because you know I don't really watch Saturday Night Live, but the one he was talking about what happened with Kanye when Kanye was on Saturday Night Live, and after the show was taped, how he basically held the cast hostage, and how he was saying how he was being bullied about his wearing the MAGA hat and on and on and on about Trump this and Trump that. And of course, you know, and basically he was saying, "Look, I've had my own issues with," because he was saying, you know, when he's like, "I know I shouldn't be saying this. Talk about Kanye, because everybody probably thought Michael Che would be the one that talked about it because he's black. But see, I'm talking about it, Kanye, because I'm crazy."
So yeah, that was a beautiful moment. That really was. I think we even ran the audio here. By the way,
it was awesome.
Michael wants us to know that Candace Owens, the subject of the breakup, Candace, if you weren't aware, was the person primarily responsible for filling Yeezy's empty head with alt-right garbage. And Dustin wants you to know, as far as California is concerned, Dustin says, here in Sacramento, we had cops harassing homeless people in the 2016 election. That still qualifies as voter suppression. And, you know, it does.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, well.
It does.
Yeah, there are no passes. But I got to.
No pass.
Yeah, I got to roll on out of here. It's been a magnificent conversation. It always is, Tracy. I'm glad.
I did beef stew in the crock pot for dinner tonight. So I got to go make the cornbread.
Did you see my food porn stuffed peppers?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, they went up on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. I hollowed out jalapenos, filled them with chopped brisket, covered them with Havarti, and slow roasted them over hickory coals.
You bastard.
Yeah, they're pretty good. Okay, I'm lying. Well, they were real good.
They were fucking amazing. Just say it, Bob. They were just fucking amazing.
You know, every once in a while I do something really, really right, and that was one of them.
Oh, I see the pictures. Wow. Okay. Nice. Well, yesterday for dinner, I did a cheesy chicken and broccoli and rice, one skillet dinner thing, which was amazing.
Nice.
I got a nice beef stew. So on that note.
Yeah, it's about time for me to fire up the smoker and do the practice turkey.
There you go. And I'll be thinking about you when you do that. Just make sure you take pictures so I can hate you from afar.
Okay, that's just fine. If anybody's going to hate me, I want it to be you, Tracy.
I love you guys.
Because God knows you've got it coming, the fucking shrimp tacos and the taco trucks and stuff. I mean, you know.
A taco truck on every corner.
Yeah, two-way street, Tracy. Two-way street.
Yeah.
You take care of
that. Don't. I'm out.
All right,
you
bye now.
Good night.
Cornbread. Clarence, meanwhile, says Kanye, the house Negro, is trying to return to the field. He is not welcome. Well, you know, we'll see. But what about that? What about that Bible story about the prodigal son and all that stuff? Yeah, but I felt like we had to have a little bit of good news. And frankly, Steve King having to sweat his reelection is good news. And maybe we can dare hope that there are enough people who haven't been voting in Iowa, who will vote in Iowa, that will take the stain off of that district. Because I don't know how many times I've said, you know, I just want to go to Iowa and start knocking on doors in Steve King's district. And say, what the fuck's wrong with you? Because he's a Nazi. Plain, you know, simple. Also, in conjunction with the 14th Amendment stuff, one of America's more prominent neo-Nazis, a little creep by the name of Andrew Anglin, over at the creep Nazi website, he wrote, "Master race president remains the master of races." Yeah. And a woman in Talibandiana who looks surprisingly like Roseanne Barr. Well, she was suffering some economic anxiety. She's facing misdemeanor charges of intimidation and criminal mischief. Because she left a letter on her new neighbor's home that was aimed at their little child. No NIGGERS wanted in this neighborhood, all caps. This is a white neighborhood. Some people find NIGGERS stressful. Your NIGGER kid is not welcome. You can sell your house and make money on it right now. By the way, hope you have deep pockets. Because they've... Yeah. And now she's got a protection order against her, preventing her from contacting the family again. Yeah, when they bought the house, the seller of the home said the neighbor was worried about the family because they had a black son. The woman, whose name is Deborah Cantwell, said, "I'm stressing now that we're going to get black neighbors. I'm hoping that more people look at the house, and an all-white family are the ultimate buyers. I'm afraid the stress of black neighbors could put me in the hospital. My blood pressure is elevated just thinking about the possibility." And then when she got busted, she said, "I mean, the blacks get away with it every time. Just rage. I was trying to vent. I just needed to let off some steam, and it was the... I'm not a violent person, so I didn't think it was any big deal." When they asked her if she was sorry, she said, "Yes and no. I'm sorry that it caused so much ruckus, but I feel like I released some anger writing that letter." But she really didn't feel like she'd done anything wrong. Excuse me, how's that not a federal felony? I know. Oh, one last thing. The Republican candidate for a Missouri General Assembly seat, District 15, is apparently just eyebrows deep in economic anxiety. His name's Steve West. He says things like St. Jude Hospital, their cancer research, they're getting kids sick through vaccines and other means, and they're torturing them with these anti-cancer drugs. The St. Jude's Hospital, it makes me sick. How they're suffering. And all for a little PR for the Jewish cabal. Well, he's got a fighting chance of winning his race, but his daughter, to her credit, stepped out and said, "I completely disavow everything he says, and it makes me sick. I can't imagine him in government." What is he? Well, of course, he's a broadcaster. Yeah, another one of those. And he makes lots of anti-Semitic remarks. He also goes after gay people, minorities of all sort. Absolutely disgusting. Merca, we will find out a lot more about who we are and how badly this country is gerrymandered and voter suppressed a week from tonight. And in the meantime, I have a feeling that Julius Geezer is going to lose his, well, not lose it, it's long gone. But if you thought he was weird before, it's going to get weirder. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to our subscribers. Thanks to everybody who keeps the program going. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this little program. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you very kindly to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.